louder and louder until it merged with her heartbeat. Muffled, whooshing as if underwater, she traveled with the flow of her blood, propelled herself forward. Her frisbee-sized red blood cells swam past her, grazed her bare arms like firm jello. Everything around her red, so very red. She swam through another dark tunnel and emerged among her nerve cells. Violet nuclei housed in neon blue cytoplasm, which gave way to a network of dendrites like twisting tree limbs. Tiny explosions went off around her, and she became tangled in nerve branches. "I don't want to be here anymore," she muttered. A great white flash, and she was in a nest of wires painted with day-glow stars. Another flash, and she was among real stars, in deep space, gliding past a nebula. Its pastel cloud of dust and gas morphed into shapes. An eye, an hourglass, a pinwheel. It was the most beautiful thing Una had ever seen. "Dale, can you see this? You should be here with me." As she continued to float, the stars formed outlines of people, a celestial connect the dots. Though they were gender-neutral silhouettes, Una could make out one of Dale and another of her father. In her head, a disembodied voice whispered, "We all start here, and we all come back here. You are only stardust." From a distance, other voices grew clearer. "Is she breathing?"
"Yeah, but we may need to carry her out. Hold up, she's moving."
Una's eyes fluttered open.
"I died, and it was so beautiful," she murmured. Four faces hovered over her. "Is it still 1991?
All four nodded.
"Are you still my friends?"
"We sure are, baby doll. But it's past last call and we need to leave."
Sin bent down and eased Una to her feet.
"You good to walk?"
"Not good. Great."
Her limbs were helium light as she exited the club. Outside, Desi, Jenny, and Whitney walked ahead in search of taxis.
"Una, you're gonna wanna step it up," Sin said. "The meatpacking district isn't the best place for a 4 a.m. stroll."
Old metal awnings further darkened the dimly lit streets, and the few cars that drove by did so with slow and seemingly sinister purpose. Layers of grime and graffiti coated the industrial buildings, some of which still bore hand-painted signs advertising wholesale meat distributors.
"In 10 years, this place is gonna be filled with designer boutiques."
Una marveled at the neighborhood squalor, as if parading through a sepia-toned photo.
"Yeah, well, I don't think that's Calvin Klein drinking a 40 on the corner."
Up ahead, a heavy-set man in a bomber jacket sat on a stoop taking swigs from a paper bag. Casting him a furtive look, Sin added,
"Button up your coat."
"But I don't feel cold. I feel magnificent."
Twirling around, Una spread her coat open wider and laughed.
"And I feel like you're gonna get us into trouble."
As if on cue, the man looked up as they passed, sneered, and yelled out,
"Tranny faggots!"
Sin grabbed Una's arm and tried to quicken their pace, but Una shook off her friend's grip and confronted the man.
"I don't know what's worse," she said.
"How rude you are, or how ignorant?" At that, the man lurched to his feet, showing his full, refrigerator-like proportions. He grabbed Una by the throat and threw her against a storefront's steel rolling shutter with a tinny rattle.
"You think I'm gonna let a little bitch like you talk to me like that?"
"She's sorry. Una, say you're sorry."
Sin tried to pull the man off her friend, but he swatted her away effortlessly, keeping a firm grip around Una's neck.
"I'm not sorry," she wheezed.
Unable to breathe, Una's earlier euphoria morphed into a dark confusion. She didn't have enough air to say anything else. Her eyes darted to a sign across the street advertising frozen oxtails and back to her attacker, a looming, menacing shadow. As his hand clamped tighter, the edges of her vision blackened, and two contradictory thoughts raced toward each other.
"No, don't hurt me."
"Yes, do it. There was shouting, so much shouting, and the scramble of people running. But the only thing she saw was a giant fist coming at her face.
Chapter 12. You sure you don't want to go to a hospital? Sin asked.
She and Una were in the back of a taxi permeated with body odor and pine air freshener. Bringing a hand up to her nose, Una hissed as a bolt of pain shot through it, joining the throbbing chorus of her left eye and jaw. She tasted blood, but running her tongue over her teeth proved them intact.
I don't think anything is broken.
Her voice was hoarse, and it hurt to swallow. Wincing, she turned to Sin, whose arms were folded tight.
I'll get you cleaned up at my place, then. You can crash on my sofa.
Thanks.
Neither said another word as the car made its way to the Lower East Side.
I really don't want to put you out,
Una said as they climbed the stairs to a second-floor apartment in a building above a luggage store.
It's fine.
But her tone and movements were clipped as she unlocked the door. It wasn't until Una was sitting on the edge of the tub, having her face dabbed with hydrogen peroxide-soaked cotton balls, that Sin let loose.
You want to explain what the hell happened back there? And don't give me no excuses about drugs, because I've seen you more fucked up, and you've never done anything stupid like that before. Did you want to get killed? Because my skinny ass couldn't stop him from beating on you. And if I didn't get the others back in time, he might have snapped your neck, then come for me. What the fuck?
Sin tore open a packet of gauze. The antiseptic seared her raw wounds, and Una gritted her teeth.
I don't know where that came from. It was such an ugly thing he said. And so stupid. I mean, we're both women.
Girl, I know I'm a stunning lady, but you can't tell me you forgot I was born a man.
These were the slip-ups Una dreaded the most, the social landmines she tried to avoid.
It's just...
Was there any explanation that didn't sound lame?
I only think of you as a woman.
So many questions, but better they remain in 1990 Una's purview. Sin allowed a grudging smile.
You're sweet, but it was dumb and dangerous for you to talk back to him. You think I don't hear shit like that all the time?
Her face tightened again.
I worry enough about getting jumped without your smart mouth.
I'm sorry,
Una croaked, her split lip trembling.
No need to boo-hoo about it. Just be happy he didn't break your head open and keep quiet next time.
She secured a bandage across the bridge of Una's nose.
You feeling dizzy or nauseous?
No, just cold.
Hopefully you don't have a concussion. Now let's get some ice for that eye.
Thank you.
The words a strangled whisper. Una followed her to the living room, which was dominated by an overstuffed sofa covered in a quilt patterned with orange and green triangles.
You lie down right there,
Sin instructed, firm but not unkind. The quilt wasn't enough to subdue Una's shivering, so Sin brought her a pair of wool socks and a second blanket, followed by a bag of frozen peas and a mug of hot chocolate. Sin took an armchair beside the sofa and held out a plastic baggie.
Jenny said to give you this. Vicodin. You in any pain?
Tons.
Una popped one of the pills. The hot chocolate soothed her ragged throat.
I'll let you get some rest.
Resting quietly would have been safer, posed less risk for slip-ups. But Una craved a real connection with another person.
Can you stay and talk to me for a bit?
Sin crossed her legs and entwined her fingers over her knee.
What? You want me to bore you to sleep in case the Vicodin doesn't work?
Something like that.
She offered a weak smile.
It's just nice to be with a friend.
This elicited an appraising glance from Sin.
What?
You're real different from how I thought you were when we met.
Uh-oh.
Different how? Leaning forward, she lowered her voice.
I'll be honest. I wasn't sure how much I liked you the first time Desi introduced us. And even in the weeks after, I couldn't help thinking there was something phony about you.
The Vicodin was painting everything over with a soft focus brush, but this made Una sit up straighter.
Really? Like what?
Well, there was the way you dressed. It seemed too polished, you know? Not your own style as much as someone dressing you. But now I get it. You're trying things out, and that's okay. It wasn't fair for me to judge.
Was that it? The way I dressed?
Well,
Sin scratched the back of her head.
Okay. There was also the way you talked. Some things you said sounded made up. Like you have all this money and claim to be a financial advisor, but you don't look like anybody I've seen on Wall Street, and change the subject anytime I ask you about it. But I thought, hey, she doesn't want to talk about where her money comes from, that's her business, leave her be. But that made me question other things you'd say. Like, did your mom really work for Pan Am as a teenager in the early 60s?
She did.
Oh.
In a more subdued tone, she asked.
And did your dad really drown in a boating accident?
Yeah. In an instant, Una was back on the boat, which reeked of fish and the cigars the men smoked while they waited for a tug on their lines. The combined odor was foul, but she'd take extra long breaths of it, perched on a bench with a Nancy Drew book, a few feet away from her father, who'd been leaning over the railing when the boat jolted. He toppled over like a cartoon character. And she'd laughed at first, because his bewildered face was so goofy. But the hollers that followed eclipsed her giggles. The stuff about my dad is true. And I am a financial advisor of sorts. But I also kind of inherited the money. And I don't like to talk about it. Not to be rude, it's just something I'm private about.
You don't have to explain it to me, girl. We're friends now, right? When I was growing up, Mama used to say what you dislike in other people is really what you dislike in yourself. That had me wondering if I'm phony. I mean, parts of me are, obviously.
She pointed to her chest.
And we all adopt club personas, but we're all just trying to figure it out. And once I talked to you more, I knew you were a sweetie. We've been having a blast partying together ever since. Not counting tonight's beatdown.
There was a pressure on Una's head, an invisible heavy hat. I bet we have so much fun.
You were there, honey. Or do you get more fucked up than you let on?
A playful wink. Another slip up. She had to be more mindful. I mean, I hope we'll have more fun when this... She waved a hand over her face. Is back to normal. It was great to get out of my head tonight. I could use more parties. Eyes at half-mast, so tough to keep them open.
We got a whole heap of parties coming up.
Sin's grin was fleeting.
But you know you can only stay out of your head for so long, right?
The words came at Una from a distance. Her chin dropped to her chest as she fought to stay awake.
I know.
Sin shook off her faraway gaze.
Girl, I need to let you rest.
Permission to relax granted. Una's spine softened.
No, it's okay. I like talking to you.
Sentences took more effort to form. Random thoughts swam through her head and popped up like feisty fish.
I should really call my mom.
I've got a cordless you can use. Though maybe you shouldn't wake her up.
It's okay, she's...
Una inhaled a giant yawn like a vacuum.
At some craft festival in New Paltz.
I'll get the machine.
I just want to hear her voice.
Of course you do, sugar. Hang on, I think it's... Here you go. There's some water and a bottle of juice on the end table. Give a holler if you need anything else.
Thank you.
Sin nodded and left the room. The phone felt heavy when she picked it up to dial Madeline's number.
Hi, Mom. Looks like we keep missing each other.
Such an effort to keep her voice steady, the tightrope between slurred and choked up. I'll call again when I can. Love you.
It would be a few days before her mother returned, but Una wouldn't tell her about the incident, wouldn't tell her much at all, and wouldn't see her until long after her face healed. Was shame making her punish herself? Denying her mother's consolation? Was the avoidance an emerging defiance? Maybe both. A slump, a sigh, and she pulled the covers tighter around herself. When she closed her eyes, she saw the dirty warehouse advertising frozen oxtails, felt the air being squeezed out of her by an angry fist. What had driven her to such a confrontation? Could be she'd been testing the limits of her known future by putting herself in harm's way. The attack should have served as a warning. Her life was like tissue paper, easily crumpled up and tossed aside. It should have sent her scurrying to her sensible roots. But surviving it had the opposite effect. It made her feel ironclad, invincible. In the dark, she brought a hand up to her tender face. I'm still here. I have time. Sin wasn't wrong about that heap of parties. The months that followed were full of excess, fun, and superficiality. After the attack, all Una wanted was to recapture the high-wire exhilaration of her outings to Pandora's box and antenna. This would require an elixir of alcohol, drugs, and a smattering of danger. But time travel would be her safety net. So she became a staple of the club scene. Sin, Jenny, Desi, and Whitney made friends faster than a virus finds a new host, and Una expanded her circle of acquaintances as a result. People to whom she was connected via venues and costumes and drugs, flimsy and fragile as a spiderweb, though at the core were the five of them. They established a social routine. Limelight on Tuesdays, antenna on Thursdays, and occasional weekend outings to the Roxy and Tunnel. Their favorite spot was the World, a former wedding banquet hall with peeling gold leaf and an aura of faded opulence. Going there was a special treat because it opened sporadically and operated without a liquor license. It played house music, hip-hop, rock, and punk, attracting a crowd that erased the boundaries between genders, races, subcultures, and sexual orientations.
I spilled a drink on Prince once,
Desi boasted one late night at the World, from a balcony overlooking the cavernous dance floor.
Right where we're standing. Someone shoved into me, and I dumped my vodka crayon all over his white, ruffled shirt.
While the others gave impatient smiles, having heard the story one too many times, Una's eyebrows shot up and she asked, Did he get mad?
Oh, honey, no. He just took off his shirt and threw it over the railing, walked around bare-chested the rest of the night.
Una herself had some smaller brushes with the present and future infamous, though she didn't always recognize them for who they were or would become. When they went dancing at the Pyramid, a shoebox of a club on Avenue A, and she spotted Lady Bunny and RuPaul's big blonde wigs, Una was tempted to sidle up and tell them they'd be world-renowned drag queens, though they probably already knew that. At the Limelight, a gothic church-turned-disco, when a man with clownish makeup and a diaper-slash-corset ensemble offered her champagne, Whitney told her to turn it down. The champagne turned out to be piss, and the man was Michael Alig, club promoter and ringleader of the Club Kids, whose antics would become the stuff of legend and nightmares in a few years when he'd be indicted for murder. And who is that? She asked Desi one night at the Roxy, pointing to a boyish man waiting for the bathroom. I keep seeing him around and he looks so familiar.
Oh, that's Moby. I think he's a DJ. He'd be cuter if he shaved his head.
Sometimes there were after parties at Save the Robots and sunrise breakfasts at 7A or Sidewalks. Bloody Marys more often than eggs, since ecstasy, coke, and K killed the appetite. Then there were underground parties at unconventional venues. Burger King, Home Depot, a subway car. They swarmed like rainbow-colored bees, with Johnny Panda leading the charge. Someone would bring a boombox and tinny techno would punctuate their outlandish cheer. The parties were fun in concept and amusing for the first half hour, the club kids dazzling in a mundane setting.
Then there was the rush when the police arrived, and they scattered before being rounded up for disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace or indecent exposure. While technology had been her umbilical cord to the world in 2015, this year's Una was happy to disconnect from screens. Not that she had a choice. The novelty of convenience was replaced by the familiarity of the analog. Going to stores instead of shopping online, hailing taxis instead of ordering Ubers, using landlines and payphones instead of her cell. It was nice to see people out and about living their lives, rather than curating them for the internet or hiding behind their devices. It also made it easier for Una to drift apart from her mother, to return fewer of her calls. Yes, Una was happy to disconnect. Her days and nights took on a flipbook's repetition, each image the same with minor changes. One night she came home covered in glitter, another in fake blood. One night she came home with a broken heel, another a broken handle on her Wonder Woman lunchbox. She developed a taste for house music, techno, freestyle, and breakbeat, finding appeal in the rhythm. She conjured clocks ticking off the seconds and tracking her pulse, each song an erratic metronome that stated she was both moving and standing still. Her nights were full of so much sound. Silence balanced out her days. She recovered from these outings in her music room, splayed out on the fuzzy carpet, often ignoring her records. Sometimes she'd sneak a wistful look at the guitars, but she never touched them. Music should be our biggest high, Dale often said. So fervent, quixotic, naive. Sorry, baby, but I need something stronger. The calendar might have put her at 27, but inside she was barely out of her teens, with so little accountability and so much disposable income. And so it was the year of color, artificial highs, and staged recklessness. Building off her silent film star haircut, Una adopted a club version of a flapper look, wearing low-waisted dresses fringed with unconventional materials. Chains, dollar bills, bones, bacon strips, syringes. She had long necklaces made of pill capsules and candy, cocktail rings with jeweled skulls and insects trapped in amber. The classic style of a bygone era made modern, warped. Her look wasn't as extreme as some others, but it still caught the attention of a producer for Geraldo, who stopped her one night at the Limelight and asked if she'd like to appear on an episode about club kids. Una politely declined. She also avoided being mentioned in Michael Musto's nightlife column in the Village Voice. Once in a while, she wondered if she should be doing something more substantial with her time, but forced her focus on the inconsequential. The next outfit, the next party, the next drug and alcohol combo that would bury her in a blizzard of chemicals. It was a temporary fix, but she felt at home among these oddballs. That would have to suffice, at least for 1991. Who knew what year would come next? She could be 21 and middle-aged again, or even a senior citizen. No telling when she'd revisit her youth. So she turned the year into one long party. The party got interrupted three times. The first time was a Friday morning in March. Just after 8, Una was exiting a taxi dropping her off at home, still in last night's garish outfit. Coming up the street, a grocery bag in each hand, was Madeline.
I thought we could finally have breakfast together, unless you want to keep avoiding me.
I already ate breakfast. Two Bloody Marys, but surely the tomato juice counted as nourishment.
You look like you haven't eaten in months. Cocktail mixers don't count.
Is she a mind reader now? Her mother's sarcasm was like a Brillo pad on Una's bare skin. If we're gonna fight, can we do it inside? Trudge, trudge, trudge up the steps into the house.
I come bearing bagels. You don't bring bagels to a fight. Why don't you go change while I lay out the food and make coffee? Nice outfit, by the way. Never saw a dress made of duct tape before.
Una entered the kitchen a few minutes later, face scrubbed, wearing clothes made of actual fabric. Her mother slid over a plate piled so high with smoked salmon, the bagel beneath it was barely visible.
I like the new hair. What else is new?
Madeline asked. Getting only a shrug in response, she said.
I was in Home Depot the other week when it turned into a spontaneous party. I saw you there.
A sharp click as two bagel halves popped out of the toaster. No eye contact as she focused on spreading them with cream cheese.
Why didn't you come say hello?
Because you looked high as a kite and were busy dancing with a giant panda. I figured you didn't want to see me. She waved the cream cheese-covered knife as if conducting an invisible orchestra. Bafflement made her mouth wide and mirthless.
I just needed to, I don't know, enjoy myself. Be someone else. Get out of my head.
Mission accomplished from the looks of you.
See, this is what I didn't want.
Una pushed her plate aside. The veiled judgment. Motherly wisdom.
Last year was not easy. I just want to have a good time while I can.
Are you sure that's all it is?
The paper-thin slice of salmon glinted as Madeline popped it into her mouth.
God, this lox is so good it melts in your mouth.
Maybe you'll enjoy it when you sober up. You know your father's mother was an alcoholic, and Charles was a heavy drinker. That type of thing is hereditary.
I'm not an alcoholic.
She rubbed her eyes with the heels of her hands, which came away dusted with glitter.
I'm not saying you are. And how you decide to have a good time is up to you. But you should know addiction runs in your bloodline.
A sigh that provoked no reaction from her daughter.
You know I'm not a prude about drinking, drugs, sex, none of it.
But I always saw you often enough that I knew I didn't need to worry. When you avoid me, I wonder what you're hiding.
To deny any obfuscation would be an insult to her mother. The least she could do was offer some transparency. Maybe I need to hide for a little while, Mom. Maybe that's what this year is about for me.
Maybe.
A whimper of agreement. How terrible it must be when the source of your pain is your own child.
Whatever you're worried about, don't be, Una said. I've seen how things turn out, and we're both okay.
That doesn't mean you're bulletproof. It doesn't mean what you do today won't have consequences years from now.
You don't need to tell me about consequences.
She thought back to the birthday dinner with Crosby, the painful limo ride after. Would this year be happier if she was still with him?
I can't win with you, Mom. You give me shit about being too serious. Try to get me to loosen up and have more adventures. But now that I'm having them, you're giving me shit about that, too.
Nobody's giving you shit.
The corners of her mouth turned down.
I just miss how you used to open up to me.
We were so close.
It's an adjustment for me, these different versions of you.
Yeah,
I know all about making adjustments. Una poked at her bagel with no intentions of eating it.
Sorry it's so hard on you.
The harshness of her tone startled both of them. I really am sorry, she said, chastened. I'm just tired.
Go get some sleep, then. We can have breakfast together some other time. I'll put the food away and see myself out.
The second time the party got interrupted was at the end of June, when the owner of their favorite club, The World, was found shot to death in one of its gilded balconies. The club closed for good. The third time was in September at the Limelight. While heading to the bar, Una spotted a familiar blue pompadour. Crosby. Seeing him shouldn't have triggered more than a twinge of regret. But instead, his pale, handsome profile flooded her with something stronger and more complicated. The loss of what might have been. I was loved by him, and now I'm not. What would it have been like, feeling a natural high with him, rather than chasing an artificial high with her friends? Was it too late? Maybe enough time had passed that he could forgive her. In her drunkenness, she decided it was a good idea to find out. As she approached Crosby, a redhead with Betty Page bangs and a black latex dress slipped a possessive arm around him. Recognition flickered across his features,
before a solemn mask slid down his face like a steel door slamming shut. Una wanted to backtrack, but the redhead nailed her in place with a smug leer.
Can I help you?
I thought... Never mind. Una turned around and rushed to Jenny, who handed her a small glass vial and made it all better. The drugs made everything more fabulous until they didn't, until the hangovers became increasingly brutal. After seeing Crosby, Una found herself in a vicious cycle of needing alcohol and drugs more often and earlier, to feel normal, to feel nothing, a hamster running on a treacherous wheel. Next year I'll take it more seriously. Next year I'll try to make something of myself, do something meaningful. She still gave to charity anonymously, donating exorbitant sums to children's hospitals, animal shelters, AIDS research, and other organizations.
Do you know how much money you're throwing down the toilet in taxes?
Harold Rubin, one of her advisors at Chestnut Investment Services, complained.
You need to offset your significant capital gains. We're talking millions in potential deductions if you set up some kind of foundation.
I'll set up a foundation later on. When Kenzie does it for me, after he learns long division and gets a diploma or two. Not right now, she said over the phone, certain they'd had this conversation before. Besides, I'm going to make more money than I could ever spend in a lifetime.
Don't be too sure about that, Una. I've seen how quickly people can make and lose money, how careless they get. You've been on a hot streak, but you can't predict how the markets are going to behave. For one thing, I think you're getting out of biotech too soon.
I am, but that's okay. I have a good feeling about this Qualcomm IPO. She chuckled, knowing the stock would increase by nearly 12,000% in the years to come. While she tried to maintain a low profile about her wealth on the club scene, rumors circulated that she was an heiress with millions. I heard her mother's related to the Astors. I heard it's mob money. I heard she was some kind of pop star in Europe in the 80s. I heard her grandfather invented the lawnmower. Whenever someone asked Una flat out, she'd give a mysterious smile and shrug. Except one time, after she'd chased two tabs of ecstasy with copious lines of cocaine. She was with her usual crew, at Sidewalks at 5 a.m., on her second Bloody Mary.
So come on, where does your money really come from?
Desi prodded. Una was slouched in the booth as if her bones had been rubberized. I actually travel through time and memorize stuff that'll make me money. Mostly stocks, some sporting events, that sort of thing.
Like Back to the Future Part 2?
Jenny asked. Kinda. Silence around the table. Could it really be this easy? A seed of relief. They believed her. Una waited for an onslaught of follow-up questions. There weren't any. Instead, an outburst of laughter. First from Whitney, then the rest of the table. Even Sin laughed, though she was the first to stop as curiosity clouded her features. A waiter came by, and Una asked for another round of drinks and the check. She usually picked up the tab, which didn't bother her. If she spent more time sober, it might. She glanced around the table. These people would be strangers to her in a matter of months. Maybe she'd chosen them as friends because they were strangers to begin with. And there she was, little girl lost, with buckets of money. On New Year's Eve, they went to Antenna, arriving early for refreshments in a VIP room before the countdown. Dressed in a black sequined top hat, sleeveless shirt tails unbuttoned to her bra, and glittery fishnets, Una played a shinier, skimpier version of a modern-day Marlene Dietrich. She wouldn't be out long, only wanted to enjoy a few final moments of whimsy, and palmed the ecstasy tab Jenny gave her, nursing her champagne for the next hour. A little after 11, she slipped out while the group was distracted by one of Jenny's stories. Down the hall, a few feet from the stairs, a voice over her shoulder.
Where are you sneaking off to?
Sin asked. Just going to the bathroom.
Upstairs, to the one 5 times as crowded.
A breezy shrug. I wanted to walk around a bit,
It's not as fun when you're sober, is it?
Una opened her mouth to protest, but Sin clucked her tongue.
Don't even, girl. I saw you palm that E, and you've been sipping champagne looking like Michael Alex's pissed in it. What's the real story?
I'm just tired. But she owed Sin more than that. And it's becoming less fun even when I'm not sober.
The law of diminishing returns.
Yeah, exactly. I keep thinking about a conversation I had with my mom a while back. Turns out my dad drank a lot. I never thought about it as a kid, because he never got angry or violent, and he and mom rarely fought. He liked his beer and would get a little loud after finishing a six-pack. Then he'd get sleepy and go to bed. It wasn't a problem until the day he drank a six-pack and fell off a fishing boat. A grim understanding darkened Sin's voice.
And we've all been drinking our six-packs and getting a little loud. But you gotta go before you fall off that boat. I get it. I don't know how much more of this scene I've got in me either.
Her tone was unconvincing, and they both knew it.
Not like I got anything better to do. I did just inherit $5,000 from an older gentleman friend I knew. So that should keep me in wigs and lashes for a while yet.
But there was another way Una could show her gratitude. Cisco Systems. Forget wigs and lashes. Invest some of the money. You missed Cisco's first split, but I have a feeling it'll split again. It was more than a feeling. The stock would split 8 more times in as many years. She clutched her friend's wrists with urgency. If you invest $2,000 now, in 8 years you'll have close to $500,000. Please, trust me on this. The purse of Sin's mouth projected suspicion, but there was a glint in her eyes.
I'm not gonna ask how you know, but I'll believe you on this one.
She whipped out a lipstick and scrawled Cisco across her bare arm in red.
Any other names you want to add?
Dell, but ditch it in March of 2000. Oracle, GE, Apple, hold on to that one for a while. When her friend was done writing, she said, Sin, I need to thank you.
Uh-huh. You thanked me plenty. And I think you just gave me a future as a rich lady. Anything else you say is gonna ruin my makeup.
Fervent waving at her damp eyes.
I'll take a hug, though.
The women embraced.
Happy New Year, sugar.
Sin winked and shooed her away.
Now get the hell off this boat!
And with that, Una's year of frivolity was over. It took 15 minutes to hail a taxi, and once she climbed inside, she let out a long breath. She'd missed 1991. Would she ever have this much fun again? She probably wouldn't. She probably shouldn't.
Traffic is bad. You might not make it to Brooklyn in time,
the driver warned. It doesn't matter, she said. I won't be here for the new year anyway. In the rearview mirror, the driver arched an eyebrow but said nothing. He was right about traffic. She wouldn't get home in time to write her 1992 self a letter. But that was okay. That Una would be far more wizened than this one. They were on the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway when the countdown began over the radio. This time she didn't close her eyes. She watched the Manhattan skyline crawl past and wondered if it would look the same the next time she laid eyes on it. 3, 2, 1. Part 4. Some Kind of Stranger. 2004. 40:21. Chapter 13. A rhythmic rattle and the ground beneath Una lurched, sent her tumbling. On hands and knees, more rumbling as nausea roiled through her. Blink, blink, blink. Focus. Yellow and orange molded seats with wood panel trim. Strips of fluorescent light along the ceiling. Stainless steel poles running down a center aisle. A picture window bearing an orange circle with the letter F.
Why am I on the subway? Una got to her knees. There were a handful of passengers in the car, but their appearance gave Una no hints as to the possible year. Am I still young? Ish? A 20-something woman in a houndstooth coat rushed over.
Are you okay, ma'am? She asked.
Maybe not. I think so. Una used a nearby pole to help herself stand. I just spaced for a second. A deep male voice called over the loudspeaker.
Next station, 15th Street, Prospect Park.
I found a pen, the woman said, holding out a ballpoint. When Una didn't take it, she added,
You were just asking for one. You seemed pretty upset.
The station came into view as the train slowed down. Why was I upset? Una asked. And what did I need to write down?
15th Street, Prospect Park,
the conductor announced as the doors opened.
Next stop, Fort Hamilton Parkway.
I don't know, the woman replied. I didn't hear all of it. Shit, this is my stop. Una was half in and half out of the car.
What did you hear?
Please stand clear of the closing doors, said the conductor.
Una stepped back to be fully on the platform as the woman's blank stare brightened.
Edward! You mentioned someone named Edward. And Peter!
Before Una could ask anything else, the door slid closed and the train pulled away. As she exited the station, she checked her pockets. One was empty. The other contained a Metro card, house keys, a few 20s, and the silver watch from Dale, which had stopped at 3 o'clock. When did I start wearing it again? Nothing else. No letter, no post-it, no clues as to why she'd been on the subway, who Edward or Peter might be, or what year it was. She was in a black lace dress and high heels. Maybe she'd come from a party. Thanks for nothing earlier, Una. As she approached her house, a man in a dark suit and gray coat was sitting on her front steps, his leather loafers glinting in the streetlight. He sprung up as soon as he saw her, his face in shadow.
Una, I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
Trepidation in his tone. A British accent. Less royal family, more Michael Caine.
Who are you?
She backed away from him until she bumped a lamppost.
Una, it's Edward. Do you know who I am? Has it happened again?
At least it was one of the names the woman on the subway had mentioned. She took one step forward.
Has what happened again? Your memory lapse. You told me about your condition. Have you forgotten who I am?
The trill of fear in his voice matched hers.
Yeah. It's okay, Una. Why don't we go inside, and I'll fill you in.
Despite the dollop of reassurance, Una narrowed her eyes.
Hang on. I need a minute here. I can't just invite you into my home. I can't even see you back there.
If you could... That's fine, that's close enough. Once he inched into the light, the face revealed was handsome. Hooded blue eyes, stubbled square jaw, shallow groove bisecting the chin, brown hair sculpted into a faux hawk. He gave a self-conscious wave and smiled, revealing a large space between his front teeth.
Hello there.
Is this my boyfriend? Her breath quickened. While Edward was conventionally attractive, she bet it was his gap-toothed smile that won her over, if he was indeed her boyfriend. If, until you know for sure, get a grip. Una put her arms behind her back and made it as far as the base of her steps. Hi.
Are you okay?
I have no fucking clue. About anything, really. What year is it?
It's 2004. Happy New Year.
You too. So let's see. 21 internally, but externally she'd gone from 27 to 40.
Ugh. There's a bottle of champagne chilling in the fridge. We can go in and celebrate properly if you like, Una.
What was beneath the glossy surface of his voice? Nerves? Annoyance?
You don't need to keep repeating my name. I feel like you're trying to hypnotize me or something.
Sorry. I wasn't sure how much you'd remember. Particularly about last year.
Was she expected to enact some sort of charade? Too bad if she was, because she intended to play it straight. Last year is a complete blank, and I've never seen you before. At his stunned gape, she added, Sorry if that's upsetting, but I'm tired of pretending. Are you and me?
She pointed back and forth between them.
Friends?
Better not to make any big assumptions. A gust of wind rustled the bare branches above them. Nature's drumroll.
More than that, I'm afraid, he said. We're married.
She let out a peal of laughter.
Oh, yeah? Holding up her bare left hand, she asked. Then where's my ring?
Rings.
He emphasized the S, digging into his pocket.
I've got them. May I?
Her dubious smirk wavered. You may. When he reached her, he extended an open palm, which held two rings, both gold, one with a solitaire emerald-cut diamond. Wow.
You thought it would be better if I gave these back to you once you had some time to adjust to the news.
Of our happy nuptials.
Well, thanks for giving me all of 10 seconds to adjust.
Dazed, Una plucked the rings from his hand and tried them on. Both a perfect fit. Are they happy? The nuptials, I mean.
I like to think so.
And I'm really married.
You are. To me.
The news seeped in like a sponge absorbing water. I have a husband. A husband named Edward.
Una, do you think we could go inside now?
His voice was professorial but beguiling, a resonant voice that demanded you listened. Now that the voice belonged to her husband, she decided she liked it. A lot. But it was still too soon to invite him in. Except, do you live here too? She nodded at the brownstone.
I do indeed. That's typically what married people do, live together.
And that's what we are. Married. To each other.
She twisted the rings on her finger. It all made sense, yet it didn't. Like a puzzle piece that fit, but needed to be banged into place. Its edges out of sync with the rest of the picture. Tilting his head, he gave her a searching look.
Not to bemoan the point, but you really, truly don't.
I don't remember you. At all. And to be honest, even though you've got the cute, charming Brit thing going on, the thought of you coming into my house right now is freaking me out. Could we talk out here for a little while?
Of course. I can even sit one stoop over if that would put you at ease.
His mouth's wry quirk belied his grave tone. You don't have to be a smartass about it. She swatted his arm.
I can't help it. It's what us charming Brits do.
They sat on the steps, a courteous space between them. So, Edward, where to begin? What's your last name?
Clary.
M-D-C-R. Madeline. Dale. Clary? Any middle name? She asked.
No middle name.
That sparked an idea. Do you know mine?
Stephanie Lynn.
No hesitation.
Which is also Stevie Nicks' real name. Your mum was so obsessed with her. When you were a little girl, she dressed you up as Stevie for Halloween 3 years in a row. You were always so embarrassed. You told everyone you were a fortune teller.
A wave of goosebumps erupted along her arms. The only way Edward could have known this was if he'd spoken to someone close to her. Or if she'd told him. She wanted to trust him,
But there were still so many question marks, so many dark corners.
"Tell me something else you know about me," she said.
"Your favorite movies are The Wall, Pulp Fiction, and Purple Rain. You have a collection of knickknacks in your bedroom, but you don't know where they all came from. You hate the color yellow. Do you need more?"
Do I? How much would it take for her to believe it? For it to feel true? As with Crosby last year, she felt the physical attraction, but longed for a leftover twinge of shared intimacy. But as with Crosby, it wasn't forthcoming.
"I just wish I had something else to go on."
"Ah."
He cleared his throat.
"You said I should give you a letter you wrote."
"You have my letter?" Una shot to her feet. "Why didn't you give it to me right away?"
"To be honest, I thought you might remember something. I wanted to chat to you a bit first. I'm sorry that was foolish."
Reaching inside his coat pocket, he produced a sealed white envelope. Una snatched it up like a rope that would pull her back to safety.
"I'll need a minute."
"Of course."
The sealed envelope bore her name in block letters, followed by the year. She tore into it. "Dear Una, I'm still figuring out the best way to navigate these leaps, how much to tell you, and the best advice to give. Finding happiness in this chronological maze shouldn't be so complicated. Maybe it doesn't have to be. Last year, I met and married a lovely man. He makes me happy. He can make you happy. You might be thinking, after the fiasco with Crosby, there's no way you can sustain an actual marriage. This will be different. Edward knows you experience time/memory lapses, and that he'll be a stranger to you. He's willing to work with that. I did put a different spin on the time travel specifically. You know how it goes when you try to tell the full truth. I told him I fell off a balcony at 18, which caused a condition where my brain resets itself every year, leaving big memory gaps. And the so-called accident happened on New Year's Eve, so that's when the amnesia kicks in. Crazy story, but not time travel crazy. Edward bought it and vowed to accept me the way I am, broken brain and all. How could you not adore a guy like that? So what should you know about Edward? This time I'm skipping the cheat sheet. The fun will be getting to know and love him on your own. Edward will tell you everything apart from some of last year's specifics, like how you met and got engaged, when you got married, etc. Say it with me now, no spoilers. He promised to be patient as you adjust to your time lapse. That's how much he loves you. Peeking over the top of the letter, she caught Edward watching her from the lower steps, his shoulders curved forward and eyebrows pinched together.
"Good letter?"
he asked. "Still reading. Riveting stuff so far."
"Well, if there's anything..."
"Actually..." A kernel of suspicion popped in her head. "You're a British citizen, right?"
"I am. Though my grandmother was American, so I have dual citizenship, in case you thought we wed for my green card."
"Oh." She hid her flushed cheeks behind the letter.
"No need to be embarrassed. I'd wonder the same thing in your position."
There was an arch lilt in his voice. She turned back to the page. "You might think the marriage is doomed to fail because of these extreme circumstances and because you were unmarried in 2015. Here's the thing. I still don't understand whether our fate is fixed or fluid. There's no telling whether our future will play out a certain way because of our actions or in spite of them. So I can't help but wonder if there's a way you could still be married to Edward in 2015 and beyond. Sure. You had a blast in 1991 with all the clubbing and drugs, and you deserved some wild fun. But don't you want more substance now? This is your chance to build on something meaningful, even if this version of you is starting from scratch. And how do you do that? I'm hardly a marriage expert, but I can tell you there's effort involved. You have to make the relationship a priority. Know when to set your needs aside to do what's best for the marriage. Be flexible, and look for ways to enjoy your time together, especially when you have less of it. Be open with him. Talk to him. Let yourself fall in love with him. A word of warning. I'm not sure Edward ever really won over Mom. She was supportive about the wedding in a whatever makes my daughter happy way. But something always seemed off. The year may start off shaky with her, but have some compassion. You're not a teenager anymore, internally or externally. As for Kenzie, he still is a teenager, so you'll still work with Chestnut on the finances. As you'll see in the binder, apart from Google's IPO, you'll hold steady with the portfolio, since the post-9/11 markets have been volatile to flat. But don't let that stop you from continuing the donations and investing in passion projects, even if they don't pay off. Financial security is one of the few things you can count on, so allow others to benefit from your generosity. Don't shy away from risky ventures. Gamble on the unknown. Hint, hint, Edward. Love, me. P.S. Ask him to make you toad in the hole. It's your favorite. Una folded the letter and glanced at Edward. An expectant silence hung between them, interrupted by a melodic jangle as she took out her house keys. "Hey, why was I on the subway?" she asked. "When I... at midnight."
"Is that where you were?"
Edward rubbed the bridge of his nose.
"How peculiar. We were at a party, and around 11:30 I noticed you were gone. I asked if anyone had seen you leave, but..."
A helpless shrug.
"Nobody had. I didn't know what to think. I'm just glad you came home and that you're all right."
"Relatively speaking, I don't know what to think either."
"Would you perhaps be more comfortable if I spent the night somewhere else?"
"I'd be more comfortable if I wasn't married to a man I never met." Could a husband magically add substance to her life? Surely her existence would always feel transient and random as long as chronology eluded her. Then again, maybe 2003 Una was onto something. Maybe marriage would suit her. "That wouldn't be fair," she said. "You live here. You can stay here. But,
"I'm happy to sleep in one of the guest rooms."
Edward sprung to his feet. Okay. There was some small relief in the way he anticipated her needs. As she unlocked the door, something still nagged at her. That woman on the subway. Something about a pen and two names. "Hey, do you know anyone named Peter?" Una asked. Edward thought for a second and shook his head.
"I don't. Why do you ask?"
"It's not important."
But was it?
Chapter 14. Una went over to the foyer mirror before taking off her coat, inspecting her 40-year-old self. "I guess it could be worse," she mumbled. Not as heavy as she'd be at 51, but her thighs, upper arms, and midsection were thicker than last year. Her face held better news. Smile lines and a faint crinkling around her eyes, but not immensely older-looking than her 1991 self. The hair, lightened to a caramel shade streaked with gold, gave her a more youthful appearance. Cute.
"What are you on about? You're a stunner."
Edward appeared in the reflection behind her. This time she couldn't hide her blush as they made eye contact in the mirror. She turned around.
"Are you hungry?"
he asked. "Yes." Her stomach made a quick dip. "I'm told I should ask for frog in a hole?"
"Toad in the hole."
A wide smile, and he held up his palms as if for a stick-up.
"You give yourself good advice. I could make it right now."
"At least he seems easy to like." "I don't know. It doesn't involve any actual toads, does it?" Head thrown back, he laughed, deep and hearty.
"No. I promise no amphibians will be harmed in the making of this dish. Let me hang up our coats first."
"Wait." She fished out the silver watch from her pocket. "I must have taken it off when the battery died. I'll need to get it replaced." Better yet, she'd frame the timepiece.
Shall we to the kitchen?
He offered his arm. It wasn't too late to run to her bedroom, lock the door, and lie in bed until her head stopped swimming. But she was hungry, so she threaded tentative fingers through the crook of his arm and followed him to the kitchen. Taking a seat at the island, she watched him prepare the meal. There was a swift efficiency to his movements, and Una couldn't resist checking out his trim but muscular body as he navigated her kitchen. When he reached for a casserole dish from a high shelf and his sweater revealed the red band of his boxer shorts, she thought, I wonder what the sex is like. But that was 1991 Una's mindset. The girl used to a quick buzz, a quick lay, quick distractions to help her forget poor decisions and bad circumstances. 2004, Una had to behave more maturely. How is a 40-year-old woman supposed to behave? Edward whisked flour and seasoning in a mixing bowl, a shushing metallic scrape echoing through the room.
Can I ask you something?
Eyes down, forced casualness in his tone. Sure.
Do you remember anything from last year?
He pressed his lips together, wanting to say more, resisting. Silence as Edward cracked an egg into the bowl, added milk, and continued to stir. You know, I wish I did, she finally answered.
But no, nothing. What's the last thing you do remember?
The 90s? Yeah, a lot of years lost this time around. She cringed at her lie. I'm sorry, I know it makes things difficult.
Don't apologize.
He got a package of sausage from the fridge.
It's clearly not something you can control.
I feel bad when it affects other people. Like people I married.
You mustn't blame yourself. I chose to be with you, and I take our marriage vows seriously. Particularly the for better or worse bit.
The sausages sizzled as he browned them in a copper pan.
Let's not even call this for worse, but for different. You probably feel like you came to, woke up, however it happens, married to a stranger. But I'm not such a bad bloke, you'll see.
In a way, you're married to a stranger now too. Una tried not to stare at his mouth. What would it feel like against hers? Would last year's chemistry carry over? I'm different, at least mentally, from the person you knew just an hour ago. It's like we found ourselves in an arranged marriage.
Hey, don't knock arranged marriages,
he said over his shoulder.
Their divorce rate is under.